This segment covers a few stories from very different domains that share a thread about received wisdom and whether it holds up. Starting with Ubiquiti's Enterprise NAS announcement, which is generating the most comments of any story today, 300 comments on a score of 350. Ubiquiti is announcing a network-attached storage product built on ZFS, positioned at enterprise buyers, and the reaction in the HN thread is heated.
Ubiquiti has an interesting market position. They built their reputation on prosumer and SMB networking gear, UniFi switches, access points, security cameras, that delivers enterprise-adjacent performance at significantly lower price points. Their customer base skews toward technically sophisticated buyers who manage their own infrastructure. Entering the enterprise NAS market with ZFS is a natural extension of that positioning.
ZFS is the right technical choice for a storage product aimed at buyers who care about data integrity. It has end-to-end checksumming, copy-on-write semantics, built-in RAID alternatives, and snapshotting that's genuinely elegant. TrueNAS, which runs entirely on ZFS, has built a loyal following among people who understand storage. The question the HN thread is asking is whether Ubiquiti's implementation is solid enough for the enterprise label and whether their support infrastructure can back up enterprise SLAs.
The critical comments are pointing to Ubiquiti's track record on long-term software support, firmware update cadences, and a significant security incident a few years back involving their cloud infrastructure. Enterprise buyers, unlike the home lab enthusiasts who love Ubiquiti, have procurement processes that ask about SOC 2, vendor financial stability, and support response times. Those are fair questions.
The AirPods effect piece is a cultural analysis with 125 points and 244 comments. That comment volume tells you it touched something real. The essay argues that wireless earbuds, and AirPods specifically, have fundamentally altered social presence norms. When everyone has a permanent opt-out device for ambient social interaction available at any moment, the default assumption in shared spaces shifts from "we're here together" to "we might or might not be accessible to each other."
The HN discussion is fascinating because it breaks along multiple axes. Some commenters think the piece overstates the technology's role. People have always found ways to signal social unavailability. Others argue that the specific affordance of AirPods, which can be inserted and removed quickly and are nearly invisible, is qualitatively different from a book or headphones in a way that changes the calculus. There's a thread about how this interacts with open plan offices specifically that's worth reading.
The European Digital Sovereignty essay by Elena Rossini is more pointed. She's writing about W Social, a European public social network initiative, and arguing that most European digital sovereignty projects are performative rather than substantive. Score of 221 with 143 comments. The argument is that governments announce platforms and fund initiatives but don't actually address the structural dependencies on American and Chinese infrastructure that define real sovereignty.
This resonates with a pattern I've watched in international tech policy for years. European governments have been announcing digital sovereignty initiatives since at least 2015, and the gap between declared intent and actual infrastructure change is striking. Gaia-X, the European Cloud Federation project, is the canonical example. Years of announcements, significant funding, and the actual operational result has been modest. Rossini's piece is arguing that W Social follows the same pattern.
Norway's ship tunnel approval is a delightful engineering story with a score of only 16, but worth mentioning. The Stad ship tunnel will be the first full-scale tunnel allowing ships to pass through a mountain peninsula, cutting off a notoriously dangerous stretch of Norwegian coastline. The engineering is legitimate, and the safety rationale is real, but it's also just the kind of ambitious infrastructure project that reminds you that civil engineering at scale is still happening.
The drug repurposing story from King's College London is more consequential. Hospitals and universities are producing medications by repurposing existing compounds at costs 90% lower than commercial equivalents. The score is 315 with 143 comments, and the HN thread is digging into the economics, the regulatory pathway, and the question of why this isn't more widespread if the cost savings are that dramatic.
The short answer is that pharmaceutical economics are not organized around minimizing drug costs. They're organized around patent protection and commercial returns. When a drug is off patent and can be produced cheaply, there's no commercial incentive to invest in the manufacturing infrastructure, so supply chain gaps appear. Academic medical centers filling those gaps are doing something genuinely valuable, but it exposes a structural failure in how drug availability is maintained.
Paul Buchheit's 2010 essay, "If Your Product Is Great, It Doesn't Need to Be Good," resurfaced on HN with 91 points and 65 comments. Buchheit, who built Gmail and coined Google's "Don't Be Evil" motto, was making the point that a product with one genuinely exceptional feature can succeed even if it fails on multiple conventional quality dimensions. And trying to be conventionally good at everything before achieving greatness at one thing is often how products lose their edge.
The reason this 16-year-old essay is getting attention now is that it maps onto current AI product debates very directly. Several AI tools are clearly great at one specific thing and quite rough on conventional UX dimensions. The HN comments are debating whether Buchheit's thesis holds as cleanly in a world with lower switching costs and more alternatives, when users can abandon a product instantly and try three competitors in the same afternoon. The tolerance for conventional badness might be lower than it was in 2010.
And this connects to the cell-based architecture piece from American Express. They published a detailed engineering post on how they structure their payment systems for resilience using cell-based architecture, essentially dividing their infrastructure into isolated cells so that a failure in one cell doesn't cascade across the entire system. Score of 129 with 52 comments. The post is technically detailed, and the HN comments from payment infrastructure engineers are adding context about the trade-offs involved.
The key insight in cell-based architecture is that the goal is blast radius limitation rather than fault prevention. You can't prevent all failures in a complex distributed system, but you can design the system so that a failure affects a bounded subset of users and transactions rather than everything simultaneously. American Express running some percentage of transactions on degraded infrastructure is acceptable. American Express taking its entire payment network offline is not. The architecture is built around that distinction.
Now, Marcus, this feels like the right moment for our "what if we're wrong" discussion, because I want to revisit the most confident technical claim that's been implicit in today's conversation about AI infrastructure, and specifically the MCP Zero Touch OAuth announcement.
Go ahead, because I think I know where you're heading.
The consensus view embedded in the MCP story, and really in a lot of today's AI infrastructure conversation, is that building identity and authorization layers into AI tool protocols is the right approach to enterprise AI governance. That once you can fold AI connections into existing IAM frameworks, the enterprise adoption friction goes away and you get responsible deployment. The zero touch framing assumes that enterprise identity providers are the right trust anchor for AI authorization. But what if that assumption is wrong?
The Steelman version of the counterargument would be something like, enterprise identity management was designed for human users accessing defined systems. The threat model for a human logging into Salesforce is understood. The threat model for an AI agent with persistent tool access, capable of taking autonomous actions across many systems, is categorically different. A user who logs in inappropriately can take some actions. An AI agent with OAuth tokens can, in principle, take actions at machine speed across everything it's authorized to reach.
Exactly. The assumption that existing identity governance frameworks are sufficient for AI authorization might be importing a security model that doesn't fit the threat profile. If we're wrong about this, if the extend existing IAM to cover AI approach turns out to be inadequate, what we'd expect to see is a class of incidents where properly authenticated AI agents cause significant damage within their authorized scope. Not because credentials were stolen, but because the granularity of authorization wasn't sufficient for autonomous action.
The existing OAuth model grants access at the application level. This app can read your calendar, write to your drive. What AI agents might need is something more like intent verification or action-level authorization, not just, this agent can access the CRM, but this agent needs approval before making any write operation over a certain threshold. Some systems are building those controls, but they're not yet standardized.
If we're wrong about the enterprise IAM approach being adequate, the concrete signal to watch for would be security incidents in the next 12 to 18 months, where the root cause is an AI agent taking authorized but unintended actions, where every individual permission was correctly granted, but the aggregate behavior wasn't what anyone intended or could have predicted from reviewing the individual authorizations. That gap between local permission validity and global behavior coherence is the specific failure mode we're not yet seeing, but should be watching for.
The honest answer is that the industry is moving faster on capability than on the governance frameworks capable of containing it. The zero-touch OAuth feature is real progress on a real problem, but it might be solving version 1 of a problem while version 2 is already forming.